Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls and your stories, your ups and downs financially with Joseph Meyer when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We're back with Joseph Meyer. We'll get to your calls in just a second here on Coast to Coast. So there are companies that are making a small fortune now renting houses, Joseph. There's one called Airbnb, where people go into a city, they go online, get a house, and rent it for a week or two or a month. Who knows? But innovative ideas, huh?
Sign of the times, George. We're going to see a lot more of this.
And they make money, don't they?
They sure do. They make a lot of money.
What do you think of some of these other internet-type businesses like Uber coming up with a better idea like that, Uber?
Well, I think the economy on balance is now looking for entrepreneurs. They're looking for people that are very innovative and looking for people with fresh ideas. This may be the perfect time to start a business. What do you think, George?
Yeah, probably. Probably. Look, we have a lot of cab drivers who listen to this program, and so I want them to prosper too. But technology, you have to stay abreast of technology.
Well, as I said earlier, you have to go with it. You can't fight change. It's inevitable. The world is changing very rapidly. And if you're going to be successful, you have to honestly be part of it.
Yep, absolutely. How about Canada? We've got a huge Canadian audience, Joseph. We're in every market. What's going on with their economy?
Well, you know, I have a lot of subscribers in Canada. They're great people. They've been very loyal. We write about the bigger picture, as you know, certainly with the energy sector, which Canada is a primary player in. They've had some rough times, but they're tough people, and I think we're going to see Canada turn around. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
If we get hit, do they get hit too?
Yes,
in terms of economics? So did they have problems in 2008, maybe not as extreme as we did?
Well, they felt the effects, certainly, of what we were going through here in the U.S., but Canada is a very strong economy. Make no mistake about it. It's a very natural resource-rich country. So they can certainly go through tough times and come back a lot quicker than you'd want to believe.
Well, okay, and what about Mexico?
Mexico is another special situation. It's an economy that continues to grow, even though we've had our problems with Mexico. They're here to stay. They're not going anywhere, and hopefully we can mend our fences and continue to do business with Mexico.
Mend our fences without building a wall, perhaps?
Well, you know, the wall is certainly part of a bigger picture of a problem that's been going on for decades, and now we're finally addressing it. Something has to be done with this illegal immigration. Don't you agree,
Jim? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you said it, that the key word is illegal.
Yes, it is.
I have no problems with legal immigration at all. This is what built our country, to tell you the truth. But illegal immigration needs to be controlled. Other countries generally do it too.
Yes, they do, and they've done it for decades.
Yep. To the phones now we go. Let's pick it up by going to first-time caller Mark in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Wow, I'm on the phone with George Norrie. That's amazing. George, I've listened to you forever and ever and ever. I love your show.
Thank you, Mark.
You guys, you get me through the night. And, you know, I love your guest. He's awesome. Really so smart. I've had a perplexing question. I just want to ask him and see what his take is on this. But what could we do to encourage people to be excited about saving money again? How could we get the banks to, you know, pay more for, you know, holding money? Couldn't that improve our economy some? I mean, is it going to just put a bullet in it? I mean, what's his take on it?
Well, we have to get back to the basics. When a man's honesty, his integrity, and the truth matter, and quite frankly, we're at a point in society where it no longer does, but hopefully that'll change. To answer the other part of your question, we got to get back to saving money, saving it on a regular basis. Did you know in China they save 40% of their salary? In Germany they save about 25%.
Wow. Is there an inducement to save money there?
Yes, it is, George.
See, we don't have one here.
No, we haven't had one for many, many years. These low interest rates certainly are not encouraging people to save.
No.
We've got to get back to the basics that once made this country great.
You make more money these days, Joseph, buying something and then reselling it on eBay than you would putting your money in the bank.
That's a fact, George. You couldn't be more right.
Woodland Hills we go in California. It's Bruce's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bruce, go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, George, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to bring up an interesting point that a lot of people may not be aware of it, and I can back it up with a reference, is what our true fiscal national debt is. And from this report, and I'll give you the reference in a minute, it's over $210 trillion. Now, this is from a very prominent economist. His name is Lawrence Kotlikoff, and he's a former Ronald Reagan financial advisor. Now, keep in mind, he does factor in Social Security payments that will be owed to Americans in the future, but he also figures in is how much the government will take in to fund those payments, also factoring Medicare that will be owed, Medicaid, and probably pensions. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. When you talk about the national debt, you certainly include the unfunded liabilities. It's in the hundreds of trillions of dollars. You know, when you talk about Social Security, and I think you'll find this interesting, George, the Social Security Fund last year lost $4 billion. Recently came out with a Social Security report that says Social Security will be broken 17 years. The average Social Security benefit's about $1,400 a month. The bigger question is, can we count on Social Security always being there? I think we have to certainly question whether or not that'll be the case.
We don't know. And a lot of people always said that the money we individually put in, we should have been able to invest on our own. Do you agree with that or not?
Yes, I do. And I think it's certainly something that more people would have taken advantage of had they been given the opportunity.
And just directed, earmarked it to certain investment instruments on our own.
Yes.
We've got Stephen now in Medford, Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hey, Stephen, you are on the air with us.
Thank you. I had a comment for your guest and then a question.
Sure thing.
He commented on the homeless earlier. I came from the entertainment industry and did quite a bit of traveling over the last 20 years. And I don't anymore, but I have friends that are continuing to travel and cobble work together, and they're telling me they're just seeing the homeless explode all over the place.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And last year, during the last year of the last administration, I met a gentleman who heads up a local shelter here in the area, who is the head facilitator there that takes all the federal funding, and he told me they were trying to house 350 homeless vets at the time, and we're only human. The conversation immediately went towards the economy, and I asked him what the homeless situation was going like, and he said every quarter that we get paperwork from the federal government to report the homeless we want to report to collect our funding, they continue to skew the parameters on how we can report these people homeless. So we're continuing to have to put them out onto the streets. That was my comment. My question for your guest is, he talks about a potential downturn in the economy coming, and does he really think it's going to be that slight? And I guess I'm more leaning towards the housing market. I'm a believer of, I totally believe this housing market's been nothing but orchestrated back. It's been a supply and demand thing created by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which was taken over by government. I believe it's wholeheartedly, almost overwhelmingly fleeced. And does he have any idea how much potential distressed property Freddie and Fannie are still kicking around in their books? I'm hearing reports from some people that are somewhat in the know that say it could be anywhere from $300 billion to $500 billion in distressed property they're still kicking around.
That could be. Go ahead, Joseph.
I think the governmental agencies are holding a lot more distressed properties than they want the public to know. I think at some point they have to come to the market for sale. As you know, George, going back in the late 1980s, I was a contractor for FDIC and Resolution Trust. And I remember very vividly when we had the commercial debacle in real estate and those properties came to the auction block, they brought very little money, George. And I think that's going to be the same scenario when the government finally decides to liquidate these homes they've been carrying on the books now for a number of years.
Somebody's going to make a deal. They're going to make some money.
A damn good one.
Yep, absolutely. Let's go next to Perry in Santa Barbara, California. Hi, Perry. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my
sure
call.
Sure thing.
What is your guest's name there?
Joseph Meyer.
Joseph. Hi, Joseph. I've heard down through the years that real wages since 1973, adjusted for inflation and everything else, you know, considering, has really gone down, and that the average person, I'll never forget my grandmother years ago when I was a kid. This was late 1972, and she read in the newspaper that 1973 is going to be a bad year for our economy.
Well, I think when you talk about wages, no question, adjusted for inflation, they've been flat since 1975. I think when you look on balance at the standard of living most Americans have been able to give themselves since the 1970s, it's become more difficult to certainly maintain your standard of living, and in a lot of instances, your standard of living has deteriorated and deteriorated quite significantly. I couldn't agree with you more.
Joseph, do other economies affect us? I mean, in India, in Japan, and places like that?
Well, we're in a global economy. There's no two ways about it. Our manufacturing has been gutted. The decent paying jobs moved overseas over 25 years ago. So we are in a global economy. All the economies of the world are interconnected, whether we like it or not. That's the reality of the times, George.
Greg in New Jersey, welcome to the program. Go ahead, Greg.
Good morning, George. Mr. Meyer, I'd like to get your take on this. 2 weeks ago in the great business newspaper, the Financial Times of London, Brooke Masters, who has a very, very interesting column, was talking about the problems with the investment banks, and she quoted that of the six big criminal institutions, if you will, here on the New Jersey, this is across the river in New York, that the board of the executives and the board of directors of the six big institutions have collectively, since January of this year, sold 9,230,000 shares of their own banks. And she says at the end of the column, what do they know that we don't know? What's your take on that, sir?
Well, I think when you talk about the selling we've seen in the stock market, aside of the instances you've just mentioned, we've seen four large investor groups, and I've written about this in the latest issue of the newsletter, selling stocks and selling them aggressively. We've seen the big insurance companies, the pension funds, the hedge funds, and the banks all selling stock and selling very heavily anytime we get a decent rally in the equity market. I think these institutions know we're headed for troubled times and they're liquidating as much as they can and try to get ahead of the downturn that they believe is inevitable, as I do.
Joseph, are we going to see this happen sooner than later?
I think we're going to see it sooner than later, George. You know, it's a process that takes time to unfold, and I think the pieces are now in place for it to unfold, and I think when it does, it's going to unfold very rapidly.
We go to Annie in Alabama now. Welcome to the program. Hi, Annie.
Hey, George.
Hi there.
Hey, Joe. I would like to tell you about how a bankruptcy has kept me from having a ride to the doctor.
A bankruptcy kept you from getting a ride to the doctor? What happened to you?
Okay, well, in 93, I was a victim of identity theft and mortgage fraud, title fraud. 99, I lost my home, filed Chapter 13 to get my house back because of some loophole in the bankruptcy law which says, if it's not my mortgage, they can get it back for me for discharge. I've been waiting for over a year for the ride to the doctor because my credit is so ruined I can't get a car. This is what we need. For any bankruptcy filed for the purpose of discharging any debt which you do not owe, which would be like a mortgage, we need a law passed, mortgage fraud, title fraud, identity theft. We need a law passed which says that if a victim of this fraud files for the bankruptcy to save his home, to keep from being put on the street, that bankruptcy cannot count against your credit.
Well, and it does count against your credit. Credit scores are critically important these days, Joseph, aren't they?
Absolutely, George. But you know, when you talk about bankruptcy laws, as you know, under President Obama's first administration, they changed the guidelines of what you could certainly declare under bankruptcy and discharge. And I knew going back those days when they changed the parameters of what would be dischargeable under the bankruptcy laws that were certainly on the books. We were headed for troubled times. You know, they've been somewhat postponed, but the times are now catching up with us. They're on the threshold of the doorstep of what we're going to have to deal with and deal with, I think, sooner than later.
You can't put off the inevitable, can you?
No, you cannot.
Joseph, give out the website again and the little newsletter offer you have for our listeners.
Well, the newsletter is straightmoneyanalysis.com. Just go to the website, click on newsletter. There's a sign-up page for the newsletter. There's even a full sample issue of the newsletter on the website, George. People can read a sample of the newsletter free. And I'm going to offer the one-year subscription, normally $259.95, at the six-month subscription price, $149.95, saving $110 over the one-year subscription price. And we're also going to provide two back issues in addition to the latest issue, which was the September 2017. People are going to get the March 2017 and June 2017 issues in the newsletter as well, George.
Great. Thanks, Joseph. Let's go to Mike in Salt Lake City, Utah, west of the Rockies, of course. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi, George. You just made a comment recently about the veterans' health care being outsourced to private hospitals, and it's a great idea. I'm in that situation presently. The problem is many veterans don't know that the Veterans Choice Program is not affiliated in any way with the government. They're a contractor.
Right.
And once you get put into that system, you have to get approval again back through their system, which goes through South Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Texas, to get a reapproval through the VA.
And it goes on forever, doesn't it?
I have a surgery scheduled for the 26th of September. They dropped this on me on the day after the holiday that they're not going to approve the surgery.
Oh.
And I've had to get my senator involved. It's only taken me a year to get surgery scheduled and go through the exams. But now here I am just, less than 20 days.
Is the surgery critical for you, too?
I have to have both knees replaced.
Yeah, well, you have to do that, that's for sure.
And I just don't think many veterans understand that the Veterans Choice Program is no way affiliated with the VA. And even though you're placed into that program, you have to get rerouted back through the VA. And once you're done, once that happens, the VA says, we've released you. We have nothing to do with it.
Yep.
And you're stuck.
We need a straight administrative program that people can go anywhere they want and the government will take care of it for vets.
It should be. I've got a 50-mile drive to my veterans center, and my doctor that's going to do the surgery is 2 miles from my house. The therapy is less than half a mile.
Do you like the doctor?
I love my doctor.
You do like him. Okay.
I love my doctor, and the reason I don't want to be operated on by government doctors is the first time I woke up during the surgery. The second time, they had the wrong knee. I was like, no, it's my right knee, and I unfortunately got in a little battle.
Thank God you weren't going in for an amputation.
No, when I was in Naples, they gave me a medication. I don't know what happened, but I woke up strapped down to a table. They just said you didn't like it.
Unbelievable.
I don't want them to touch me anymore. That's why I have a very well-known private surgeon here in the Salt Lake area.
Maybe we'll get this fixed eventually. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to take some final phone calls for you with Joseph Meyer, website straightmoneyanalysis.com. Next hour, Dr. Bruce Goldberg joins us to talk about parallel universes like only Bruce can. And tomorrow night, Dave Schrader in for us as I'm on assignment going to Scottsdale, Arizona for the Afterlife Conference. We're talking about things on the other side. And if you live out in that area, come on by. Full information at our highlight carousel reel at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Joseph Meyer and the rest of your phone calls here. Fast night tonight, Joseph, huh?
Truly enjoyed it, George. It was a classic.
Now, do you speak around the country much?
No, I don't. You know, I just had my birthday. I turned 71.
Oh, happy birthday.
Got involved in the markets, as you know, in 1966 as a 19-year-old and went up on Wall Street as a fully licensed professional in 1972. I was only 25. Been writing the newsletter since 2009. Quite honestly, there's not another newsletter like the one I write in the country, George.
Good for you, Joseph. Were you, when you first got into this, were you disillusioned by the things you saw?
Oh, absolutely. disillusion what the greed can do and make people do things that they regret, that they look back on, and they finally realize we're very foolish, quite honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think things will get better or worse for people financially?
Well, I think they're going to get worse before they get better. You know, I write from the perspective of not only living the times that I've been part of in my 51-year career on Wall Street, I write from the perspective of having understood history. And as they say, George, history doesn't always repeat, but it does rhyme, and I think we have to be aware of that.
That's so true. Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana, you are in for a treat here, Joseph. Hi, Cornelius.
Hey, George and Joseph, our great friend Tommy Danheiser. I'm the God, Guns, and Gold man, the Bible, Bullets, and Beans man there, Joseph, telling everybody to get ready. So, Joseph, you have a biblical name just like I do, and I believe we're headed for bad times too, Joseph. The only thing I see, and I don't know if you look at it, our racial situation between blacks and whites, which I happen to be an African-American and a Trump supporter, it's just the same. I want to salute both y'all. George, you were in the Navy. I think Joseph said he was in the Army, and I was a military police officer in the Army from 79 to 94. And it's a shame the way we treat our vets. At the Alexandria VA, we got a doctor killing vets, or murdering, whatever you want to call it, but nobody's doing nothing. And I just feel that's going to be a bad situation. But on these economic times, like I said, I believe they repeat and they have cycles. So in the next 2 or 3 years, we're headed for a pretty bad economic collapse.
Yeah,
so, Joseph, I wanted you to comment on if we're headed for a collapse or anything like that. Thank you, gentlemen. God bless.
Okay, Cornelius. A collapse, a total collapse, Joseph? What do you think? I don't think so. But
well, I don't
you're
think
the
it'll
expert.
Be a total collapse. It'll be a very severe economic contraction. You know, when you talk about the equity markets, I want to touch on this briefly, George. When we got above Dow 1000 for the first time in 1966, we didn't get above it and stay above it till 1983, 17 years later. When the stock market peaked in 1929 at 381 in the Dow, we didn't get above 381 in the Dow till 25 years later in 1954. The point being, when we put this final top in place in the Dow, it could be at a minimum a decade before we even get back to those price levels, George. That's the risk this market represents, people are not aware of.
Do you think the stock market today is grossly overrated?
Well, I think the stock market has three immediate main concerns. It's extremely overvalued, widely overextended, and rampantly euphoric. I don't think people can comprehend the risk they're taking in this market. You know, you got retirement assets of $23 trillion, but $7.3 trillion of those assets are in an IRA. I think you got people taking risk, quite honestly, in this market they don't truly understand, George. I think that's going to be a problem.
Joseph, we've been pretty fortunate lately with the price of gasoline and oil.
Yes,
what's going to happen with that in the next year or two?
Well, you know, we've seen oil double in price 6 times through history. January of 74, November 79, September 80, June 2000, August 2005, December 2008. I think with oil right around $50 a barrel, I wouldn't rule out a doubling of oil prices for the 7th time in the next 2 years.
That'll kill the automobile market.
Oh, absolutely.
Joe in Long Island, New York, welcome to the show. Joe, you're on with Joseph Meyer.
Yeah, hi, Joseph. Great stuff. Two questions. One would be, you know, some of these countries that don't really have a manufacturing base at all, are they really taking a chance? I mean, 90% of the shoes at one point came from China. And if the sea lanes are closed up, then what do you do? And my second question would be, have you been down to South America? And is this new iPhone overpriced? Or maybe it isn't. It is a computer and functions as a good computer.
Well, you know what I find ironic, George? The average American doesn't have savings of $500, but they got $1,000 for an iPhone. I don't get it. Can you tell me what I'm missing?
That's a lot of money for a phone, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he was talking about sea lanes. What is that?
Well, I think the sea lanes of the world are certainly where we can look towards goods being shipped worldwide, and the sea lanes are very important, certainly when you talk about trade between these countries that we do business with. But, you know, the world is changing again very rapidly, and you have to question at some point, you know, are we going to enter a conflict? It's not a question of if, it's a question of when and with who.
Let's go to Marie in Athens, Georgia, first-time caller. Hello, Marie. Good morning. Still with us?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
There you go. Caught you dozing off, didn't we?
I don't know. Well, hi, George and Joseph. I was just calling because I was really enjoying the conversation, but I wondered if Joseph could tell me, I'm 58 and I'm a senior. I'm not in any kind of debt. I don't have any credit cards, no loans, mortgages, anything like that. But I do have 1 acre of land, and I live in a place that's really needing a lot of work and all. But so I've been piecing together employment and trying to build some kind of, you know, future, because I don't have it right now. And I'm just wondering, for seniors, where would you recommend us looking at, as far as, you know, just trying to salvage some kind of retirement and future with what we have coming?
Well, I think if you can afford it, you want to certainly look at silver. It's dirt cheap. You know, when you look at the price of silver, George, honestly, at these prices, it's the equivalent of buying a Mercedes-Benz in 1980 prices. That's how undervalued.
And you would take physical possession of the silver?
Oh, absolutely.
You would. Okay.
Of paramount importance. You've got to have possession or you don't own it.
Now, speculating, if we think silver's going to go to $50 or $100 an ounce, why not buy futures? Is that too risky?
Well, the risk is the market can go down before it goes up. But with the physical, the risk is certainly being able to hang on to it through the tough time.
You just wait it out then. Okay.
Just wait it out, absolutely.
It's like a stock in that if you own the stock and it plummets, you just hold on to it. Maybe it'll go back up again.
That's exactly what it is, George.
So take it now. Where do you put the silver once you get it?
You put it in a safe and you bolt it to the floor in your home. You just don't tell anybody where you have it.
Would you keep it at a bank vault or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely not.
Why not?
If the bank gets in trouble, they'll seal the box and you'll never get it out.
Wait a minute. They'll seal your own box?
Well,
they have the right to do that?
Oh, absolutely. If the bank gets in trouble, they seal the box and they inventory it.
But it's my silver.
Well, you proved that.
Wow. That's a realistic possibility, isn't it?
It's the things you don't know that can hurt you, George.
Will some of these banks fail?
I think it's inevitable. I don't think the FDIC can bail them all out.
So the big ones are too big to fail or not?
Well, the big ones are too big to fail, and the small ones are too small to save. That's the answer.
Let's go to Michael in West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George, Joseph, how y'all doing?
Okay, Michael, thank you.
Hey, my question is, do you think coal will ever boom like it did? I mean, these places, these military places, it's building all this new equipment, and these steel factories need coal. And Trump promised that he would do coal again and make it great.
Clean
coal. What's your opinion on that?
Well, he proposed a lot, certainly running through the campaign, and he campaigned very, very vigorously through Virginia and West Virginia and these coal mining towns, and he said that he was going to lift the regulation and restriction.
We haven't seen that happen yet.
We have not seen anything in regard to that happen, George. You couldn't be more right.
Should we be using coal as an energy source? Clean coal, as Michael was saying?
Well, I think when you talk about coal and you talk about certainly the use of it and you talk about natural gas, I think natural gas is a more viable alternative. As you know, George, natural gas is the cleanest burning fossil fuel on the planet.
Yep. Well, I don't even think it's a fossil fuel, Joseph. I think it's just part of the planet.
Okay.
You, that's another show all by itself.
Yeah,
I think there's an abundance on this planet of that. Dan in Boyne City, Michigan, welcome to the show. Hi, Dan.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call. And hi, Joe.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a quick question for Joe. What do you think the impact would be long-term of the increase in wages or the demand for increase in wages for low-level jobs like fast food workers on what that might impact that industry or our economy as a whole?
And they're going robotic, Joseph.
Well, robotic is definitely the future, and again, we can't fight change. We have to go with it. But I think when you talk about these low-wage jobs, you know, we've got to create decent-paying jobs, George, whether they're created in the service sector or in manufacturing. The cost of living has never been higher than where it is, certainly in my lifetime. I don't know if you agree, but there isn't a time you go in a grocery store that prices are not going up and the box is getting smaller on the item. It's becoming increasingly difficult for people to put food on the table, keep a roof over their head. When you've got prices certainly out of line with the wages people can earn in the workplace, we have to bring back a decent wage to the workplace, George. No two ways about it.
That's true. California Burger Fast Food Company is going to install Flippy, the robotic hamburger flipper person, displacing who knows how many jobs.
Well, you know, when McDonald's started in the late 1950s and early 1960s, and I know you remember this as well as I do, the hamburger was 15 cents, the fries were 10 cents, and the coffee was a dime.
I remember that. I sure remember that. It's a long time ago. Let's go to Frank in Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hi, Frank. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Talking about banks, as long as the government can force to use a bank, since they're all private corporations, as Barry Sotoro made us everybody buy life insurance, and there's debate over whether that was constitutional or not. And they're all businesses seem to use a bank, but what if you have a business and you don't want to use a bank because you don't trust them?
God, I don't know. What would you do? Credit union?
Yes.
What do you think of bitcoins, Joseph? They scare me.
Well, they should. Well, you know, cryptocurrency is the wave of the future, and when you talk about the benefits of Bitcoin, you know, there are a few. They're quick and cheap transactions, they're irreversible transactions, they have no paperwork, and it's an appreciating valued item. When you talk about the disadvantages...
Yeah, there's a big but here.
Several as well disadvantages, George. Would you like me to name them?
Please.
Bitcoins are not widely accepted. Bitcoin valuation fluctuates. There's no buyer protection, no physical form, no valuation guarantee. Those are the downsides.
How about hacking? Throw that in there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that we had a story just yesterday that hackers from North Korea are hacking into Bitcoin crypto folks in South Korea trying to get money for Kim's rogue nation. And stealing that way by hacking. So I think it's pretty dangerous.
Well, you know, they need cash to go ahead with this missile and nuclear program, and quite honestly, they'll take it from any source they can get it. But when you talk about North Korea, it's a scary scenario. No two ways about it.
Do you think we're going to war with them, physical war?
I don't think we could rule it out.
No, you can't rule it out. I think it's a high probability. Do you?
Well, I think it's not only a high probability. The question is, you know, can it be limited or will it escalate to all of Southeast Asia? I mean, that's the bigger question.
Well, that could.
On the news outline, Mr. Corsi.
It could escalate everywhere. Lyle in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go ahead, Lyle.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Joseph. First time calling, by the way. George.
Thank you. Good to have you with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Joseph, I buy silver. The only problem is where I buy silver is usually for the gold and silver exchanges, pawn shops, whatnot. You know, currently it's going for, what, $17.95 an ounce. I'm paying quite above that, roughly around $20 to $21. What is the best way to buy silver?
Well, let me jump in for a second here, Joseph, and tell you, Lyle, listen to our commercial breaks with our longtime client, Lear Capital, because they will give you one heck of a deal in gold or silver as well. Joseph, thank you for being on the program. Joseph has a great deal for you. If you're into the newsletters, just go to his website, straightmoneyanalysis.com, straightmoneyanalysis.com. Linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Dr. Bruce Goldberg joins me, Parallel Universes, right here on Coast to Coast AM.